Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 reactions. I'm your co-host, Davey. As always, got my other co-host here, Phil. How are you doing, Phil?
Doing all right.
And with us today, we got a special guest on. It's Tony Field. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm doing well. Thanks very much. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you could hop on. For those of you that think the voice sounds familiar, you might have heard Tony on episode 2, I believe it was, of Path to Glory, talking about escapades at Adepticon, Grand Clash there in the follow-up tournament. Is that right?
Yeah. I was invited by a man and Jonathan just to go on the podcast, talk a little bit about Adepticon and how we all got on there. It was a good time. I enjoyed it.
All right. We'll talk a little bit more about what you've been up to. First, as always, we like to give a little bit of a context. This is still recording. The most recent things that have been out have been the Thundrix Profiteers and Ulthari's Guardians. We don't have a new bar list yet, so that may change some of the commentary that we give here. We are going to be going over the Guardians. We're going to do a brief review. Same thing as last episode. We'll do a brief review of the individual fighters, warband specific cards and highlights. We'll talk a little bit about overall strategies and matchups and what we think their strengths and weaknesses are. And this is particularly relevant because we just saw them perform quite well at the UK Grand Games Expo, the Grand Clash there. So that'll give some stuff to talk about there. As always, thanks to those folks who got in touch. Eat Pray Huck from the Aussie store gave us a real nice review. It looks like Ultimate Frisbee name. If I'm correct, then good. Met my wife playing Ultimate, so that was kind of a cool glance. Chadman3, glad we could help with your commute. And Given Aaron on Twitter, I'm glad we could help with your yard work. That's what we're there for. So that's the podcast way. Give you something interesting to do when you're doing those tedious tasks. Anyone else?
Public service.
Yeah, exactly. Really, all we do is give. You can hit us up at WTHcast. That's on Twitter. And we'll cover some of the other contact stuff later, but we're always looking. For me, I wanted to give a big community shout out. Lately, there's a couple great blog posts came out of the most recent Grand Clash. Steel City had an awesome breakdown with the man, the legend, Tom Bond taking his Godsworn to sixth place in that thing, which I am impressed, excited, and definitely jealous about that performance. And also we've got Michael Carlin's got a great breakdown. Two really good summaries of how they did there. And then on that same event, Wigglehammer has got a great statistics breakdown, if that's your thing, of how each warband did and how far they got undefeated and all that sort of thing. So let's before we jump into the episode proper, let's talk a little bit about what we've been up to. And Tony, I know you have your blog going right now, and so why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what you've been up to? What are you playing these days in the Underworlds arena?
Yeah, so I started the blog up. I think I've written 4 or 5 different posts now, just trying to go over various different aspects of the game, analyze some of the things that maybe aren't obvious necessarily to newer players or maybe even some more experienced players. So I've tried to do kind of balanced coverage, looking at some aggro stuff, looking at some more defensive play, deck building. And the next article I'm writing is going to be looking at passive glory and the difference between so-called passive glory and active glory and whether there really is a difference. So that's what I'm working on now. Hopefully that will be out later in the week. But I've got a pretty, you know, positive reception on it so far, so pleased about that, and going to write some more stuff.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it a lot. I think it's great you found an excellent sort of length of article to do. So, like, nothing I'm reading feels like filler, but I feel like I'm coming away with something. I've really enjoyed the your theory crafting for the Gits. That's given me some ideas to work on. That's awesome. And then I think a great article if somebody wants to jump in. They can read them all, obviously, but Base Glory is a real good one. I liked that idea. I think it's a pretty crucial way of thinking about the game. I won't spoil too much of it. I'll just let people go take a look, but it really resonated with me how I think about decks when I build them, is how am I going to score glory if I don't want to have to rely on my opponent doing something in particular, you know. So
Yeah, it was really kind of motivated by playing a lot of the Sky Dwarves recently and just realizing more than ever that decks can quickly break if a few things go wrong. So I've been kind of trying to figure out in my own mind how to mitigate some of that stuff. So I just thought it would be fun to write about that and maybe get some feedback and some ideas from other people as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was very, very relevant to the state of the game in general and particularly at this moment.
Oh, cheers. Definitely.
Other than the blog, what are you playing? What are you enjoying playing against or with, or what's your table looking like these days?
Yeah, I've been trying out lots of different things, just trying to, you know, break the meta a little bit with varying degrees of actually not a lot of success, really, sadly. So I've been trying a lot of things out with some of the local players. We've got an excellent group of players locally who play a lot, and they're all really good. We've got David Kurtz and Josue, Daniel, Doug, a lot of other players, and I've been getting some good practice games in with those guys, and they've been running a lot of the kind of meta-defining warbands, Curse Breakers, and now the Guardians, some of the Dwarves, and I've been having a tough time trying to break down and beat those decks. So I'm slightly concerned that maybe the meta's settled and the Night Vault's been solved, but there's still plenty of cards to play around with and experiment with.
Sure. And I think we can safely assume that a bar will shake things up in a little bit. I believe we feel somewhat due. But I appreciate you trying to shake things up. You know, every crazy idea is crazy right up until it isn't, and then it's a good idea. So
for sure.
Yeah. How about you, Phil? What have you been up to?
I really haven't been doing a ton. I've been pretty busy outside of the hobby. So I'm really just been playing in our local league, playing Curse Breakers, which I just sort of want to get it out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to have success with every warband at least once, and while they are good, I just they're not really what I enjoy, so I'm actually looking forward to being done with them and being able to move on to some weirder stuff to try and experiment with again.
Sure. Can you elaborate? What is it that you don't enjoy about them?
I don't know. Just that they're sort of jacks of all trades, which you'd think would make them not good at any one particular thing, but instead it feels like they're kind of just good at everything. And in certain situations, it just doesn't feel very fair when you're facing them because of their infaction objectives, which I don't need to go over here. That's been hashed out so many times. I don't know. It just feels like the level for entry is really low for them, and they've been done at a high level so many times that everybody's just kind of like, oh, yep, there's those guys. They're going to smash my face any number of different ways. And so I guess I just like the challenge of trying to play something that's a little more finesse.
Sure. Well, I think even with that, with as many new players as we have in our league or less experienced players, you've been able to kind of take a spin on them that's a little off kilter. You got some breathing room to experiment.
Yeah. So. I did try for a little while doing an all spell deck with them, and it sort of kind of almost worked. It's just very heavily dependent on dice.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because I played against a version of that, played a web game just recently against Max Bernstein, and he's just bringing out that same sort of thing.
Okay.
And it's one of those that leverages that honest opponent card, the score this in an end phase if you play no ploy cards.
Oh, sure.
And because if you have all spell gambits, then of course
sure,
you don't
free
have
glory.
Any points. It's why not? If it shows up in your hand, it's automatically going to be scored. So, and it was pretty tough. The engine can misfire a little bit early if you just are not hitting those empowers, but, it felt pretty scary. So, as for myself, I've been playing mostly Far Striders. I built a ghost deck, but have not had a chance to play it yet. And then a little bit of Skaven. I tried some mad science with a Skaven deck, and needs to go back to the drawing board a little bit. There's a fellow Mad Skulls on the Discord who's got some really crazy things going on with Festering Skaven, and trying to make a dual threat Festering Skaven, Hungering Skaven deck where those guys are doing a lot of the work. Look pretty interesting, so I might follow up on that. I really do like Speed 5, but
yes,
yeah. But other than that, speaking of Speed 5, a couple of these
yeah.
tree fellers and fellettes, I don't know. a couple of them get up there. So let's dive into that. Let's talk about the fighters. Phil, you want to break down Ulthari for us?
Sure. So, just at a high level, Ulthari is your wizard in this warband. She has sort of your standard wizard ranged attack, three mm-hmm. range, once, man, I'm going to get this wrong. It's the channel
focus
for the swirls.
Yeah. Swirly.
Yeah.
Swirls.
Everybody
yeah, I know. I just, you always say swirls and lightnings, but, so it's range three, looking for the swirls, does one damage to start, goes up to two when she inspires. She also has her staff, though the only benefit is that it starts with two damage, but I don't think you really want her adjacent to anybody if you can avoid it, because mm-hmm. she only has three wounds and never gets any more. Mm-hmm. She is highly mobile, though. She starts at four move, goes up to five. She's on two dodge all the time, so that's pretty useful to help sort of mitigate how squishy she is. And then her fun reaction, where anytime she rolls a crit in a spell, she removes a wound token from her fighter card, which of course also means that that will inspire her. And she's level 2 caster. So there's some fun things that I've seen done with that reaction. And so it kind of lets you push spellcasting a little harder than you would on some fighters, because she will effectively never take the feedback damage that you would from rolling double crits.
Yeah, the only only place it gets dangerous is if she's down to one wound. But otherwise, it's effectively...
Right.
Yeah. She's right. able to throw dice around a lot more. She can be more cavalier with it, I guess. So...
For sure.
I think the other thing I just wanted to mention there is it's pretty significant when you have... So having a caster leader is cool. It's particularly significant that she has a spell attack. I think that means that you're not only relying on... There's some... you basically have a built-in spell that you're able to use. And so if there's objectives you're trying to score that require spells to be cast, you're not only relying on what gambit spells you've drawn in your deck. So... I think that
sure.
that unlocks yep. some options for her, which is a big deal. And we'll talk about more of those a little bit later. Tony, you want to take Galahan?
Yeah, Galahan of the Glade. I think he's really the key to the entire warband. Usually, you know, we talk a lot, thanks to Claim the City, about, you know, Dangle Bros, people who you have to set up on the front line, and maybe you sacrifice some people. He's kind of the exact opposite of a Dangle Bro. He's, you know, fully beefed up and really solidly defensively right from the start of the game. So he has four health, and he defends on two shields, which is, you know, really, really strong. So that's the equivalent of a, you know, inspired Steel Hearts, which is excellent. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, if he rolls a crit in defense, then the attacker suffers one damage. So he's, you know, a really good fighter to put on the front line and hopefully, you know, bait in an attack from the enemy and hope for a crit, do some damage, and then you're in a decent position to counterattack. He's fast as anything. He moves four. He has a range of two with a melee attack that's on two hammers and two damage, so pretty respectable as well. So, you know, if he gets lucky with an early crit, he can potentially be counterattacking and taking out fighters with 3 health,
yeah.
Or you know, or maybe more if he has some support or some other, you know, ploys in his hand to kind of beef up the damage a little bit. So yeah, he's incredible. I mean, I think he really makes the warband tick.
For sure,
I agree. I think I don't think I recognized that as readily as some people did until I was on the table playing against him. Like, oh, this guy is just miserable to do anything to. I hate throwing an attack at him because the odds of success are low, and you might not only get nothing for your effort, but you might take damage as well. So, yeah, I think he's key to some strategies there.
Yeah, he's like a walking rebound. He just, you know, tilts people for the entire game. And the problem is you can't really avoid him. Because, you know, you have to get past him in some way. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit later on. But, yeah, he's an absolute pain.
Yeah, because he's fast and range too, so he's real tough to get past.
Yep.
The next one up I've got is...
I did one more thought.
Yeah, late on.
Gallanhan. I think it's sort of a sneaky sort of benefit of Gallanhan, but you absolutely do not need to inspire him. There's... Yeah. Never a need to even bother.
Many people don't know what he does when he's inspired. Like,
well, he gains knockback 1 and gains a attack everyone adjacent to him with 2 swords, which is pretty garbage. But yeah, so effectively with this warband, because he's so good and doesn't need to be inspired, you're really only looking at ever wanting to inspire 3 of your fighters, and that really helps. When your ability to inspire is fairly restrictive.
Again, to that effect, Max, playing him on webcam games, we were playing and he was like, oh, he doesn't get anything. Actually, he gets knockback on that other. He's like, what? No, he doesn't. Flips it over. It's like, just because he inspired so rarely, it wasn't important. But yeah,
yep.
He's great uninspired, and that's good enough. So, next up, I'll run down Scathol here. So, starts out, move 4, stays at that, even inspired. Defends on 1 shield, has 3 health. Scathol starts with 2 dice needing hammers to hit and doing 2 damage. Now, if he inspires, he'll pick up an extra dice and cleave, which is a pretty darn accurate attack. Range 1, I say it hurts a bit. It's only because in comparison to the rest of the warband, it feels, you know, but this is a guy who can threat 5. And then this one can, he has his special reaction is he can add an extra damage if there's a crit in his attack roll. And importantly, it didn't have to be successful. So you could crit on your attack roll, miss, you know, maybe they crit the defense and you'll still sneak a damage through. That can be a big deal. And that's on any attack with range 1 or 2. So if you happen to give him a weapon, that comes into play too.
Yep.
That's it. He's pretty straightforward there, Scathol. I think there's some cool tricks. Onslaine. Tony, you want to run down Onslaine there?
Yeah, so Onslaine is the ranged attack specialist of the warband. Kind of weak starting stats, 1 dodge and 3 health, so kind of easy to kill really early on. But does have a ranged attack, so 3 hex ranged attack. Hitting on 2 hammers, which is really solid for a ranged attack. 1 dice, sorry, 1 damage. And then 4 movement. So really good threat range. You know, you're talking 7 or more potentially if you've got some ploys as well. The reaction that's on the fighter card here is that if Anselaine takes out an enemy fighter with a ranged attack, and immediately do another range attack and you know, target another fighter, which can be pretty deadly against some of the low health kind of horde warbands like Skellies or Gits potentially. So, you know, Anselaine putting out extra damage and taking out those fighters can be pretty nasty.
And as the weakest, or I should say not the weakest, as the quote unquote squishiest to start, she can be pretty well protected with that threat range you were talking about. She can be in a pretty safe spot far back. She's got some options. So
yeah, and it's a utility fighter really. I think the main purpose is to, you know, score things like keep them guessing, you know, mm-hmm. very reliably, and change of tactics, potentially get up the board and shoot people off hexes if you need to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, definitely. it certainly has a role, but it's not necessarily the fighter that you're looking at to kill things.
All right. Well, so that's sure. that's our baseline of these fighters. And we're going to talk some more about them in conjunction with cards as they come up and some of the strategies. But we got those. And as always, you can always bring up, if you want to be looking at this as we talk about it, Underworld's DB is a great place. You can click on the Warbands tab, bring the fighter cards up. And of course, any of the cards we start talking about. But unless anyone's got anything else, we're going to jump into objectives here and start with in-faction objectives. And Phil, you got one you wanted to talk about in particular?
So one that I've really loved using and have really hated to see used against me was Reclaim the Lamentiri. So for those who don't know, Reclaim the Lamentiri is you score it in the end phase if you hold all the objective tokens in at least one player's territory. Mm-hmm. So what this often means, or at least from what I've seen, is that you load the board in such a way that it's not that you're only really needing to hold one or two of these in your own territory and you score two glory,
mm-hmm.
Which can be really strong, especially early in the game. Being able to pick up a score two on your first round can be really nice. And it can be very hard to stop mm-hmm. them from being able to score it. So definitely one of the ones I think is very strong in their in-faction objectives.
Yeah, and one thing I've enjoyed a lot about this card is just knowing that it's out there, how it changes some of the deployment or the setup. So you have this guessing game of where the objectives should be going, and Eltharion's often trying to slide one into no man's land, into nobody's territory, because that makes it either whatever side. You're trying to figure out, where can I place this, which will let me slide more objectives in there. I played against them once with the Fire Slayers, the Chosen Axes, and that was really wild, because I was trying to put them in a place that made Reclaim the Lamentiri hard, but get them in a spot where I could get on the objectives to inspire. That was, I don't know, it made for a really fun sort of mini game of the objective placement.
And I think something we'll talk about a little bit more later, but this card really messes with people who are trying to play objectives, because generally you want the objectives closer to you when you're playing them, but it also means that you might just be handing your opponent two glory if you stack them all on your side of the board. So it's like, oh man, what do you do?
Well, and I again not to spend too much time on the one card, I really like a card that makes objectives relevant, but doesn't, you don't have to define your whole deck around, I'm going to hold objectives. I would like to see more cards along those lines. Because right now it feels like either you want them because you have keys and supremacy sort of cards or tactical supremacies, or you only care as a Faneway option, right?
Unless you're Fire Slayers.
Right, sure, yeah. which are all over the place. All right, Tony, you want to pick an objective that you thought was pretty interesting or worthy of discussion for these guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, while we're talking about Claim the Lamentiri, it's worth probably talking about Scorched Earth.
Sure.
Which basically is an objective that you can score immediately if you manage to move an objective, destroy an objective from the board. And there's really two ways that the warband can do this. They can use an innate card called Leech Power, mm-hmm. Which requires the leader to be holding an objective, and then basically the objective is removed, and the leader gets to remove one wound, which essentially inspires the leader at the same time. So for one card, you know, you're getting to score an objective potentially immediately and inspire the leader, which is, you know, really, really powerful, because that then starts to increase the damage done by the leader, and it allows you to, you know, upgrade them for spell casting and things like that. So excellent card if you have it in your hand, you know, in the first turn, along with Scorched Earth. Mm-hmm. And the other way to do it is to cast Abathoth's Unmaking, which is a range 4 spell. Requires single lightning to cast, relatively easy to cast, you know, greater than 50% chance right at the start of the game.
Sure.
And you know, you can remove the objective and score Scorched Earth, and then potentially be one spell closer to scoring some other objectives that we'll probably talk about in a little while. So there's a lot of different combinations going on here. So with the right hand, you can move on to one objective, score immediately, and set yourself up to score, claim the Lamentary with the remaining objective on your side of the board, which is obviously, you know, very strong position to be in very early in the game.
Right, synergizes very nicely. And am I correct? This is the only warband out there that has access to two ways to score Scorched Earth. Everyone else is trying to do it on just one gambit.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Orcs and the Reavers only have one card to do it, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So, an obvious strength for them. I think it makes sense then to switch to talking about Song of Hatred.
Sure.
I think it sort of continues this combo. Do you want to talk about that one, Davey?
Yeah, so Song of Hatred is a, if I remember, it's a score immediately on your second spell cast of the round.
I believe that is correct.
All right.
Yep, it's score immediately for casting your second or subsequent spell.
So this, I kind of alluded to this earlier, it's real handy to have a spell on Ulthari's card herself, so you'll have the chance to, even if you only draw one gambit spell, you go to this. And this is nice because it can be scored even if you're casting gambits that are just sitting in the back. So we're talking Ulthari might do, like we just talked about, Abyssos Unmaking, score Scorched Earth off of that. She's got a number of spells that are 4 or 5 range, so she can cast those gambits without getting in a whole lot of danger. And even her cast can be done on a charge, and you're going to get close to something, but you don't necessarily have to get right up in the teeth of multiple fighters in order to do that. So it's a nice way to score some glory, often with some pretty reliable dice rolls, and get it mid round where you can see more, where everyone's understands the strength of score immediately at this point. I think
they'd have to after seeing Profiteers so much.
right. Tony, what else? You got any other objectives here you want to?
Okay, so there's an objective called Lithe Spirits,
mm-hmm.
which essentially you score if your warband, the entire warband, makes 2 reactions to score immediately card. So as soon as your warband makes 2 reactions, then you can score this. So this can once again build onto the crazy Scorched Earth combo,
mm-hmm.
Or the Abyssos Unmaking combo. So it has the potential to cast Abyssos Unmaking, roll a crit in the spell cast, which then triggers the reaction on your leader and heals you. So therefore, you've got one reaction Abyssos Unmaking. So you only need one of the reaction to score that card in the rest of the phase. So that could be another spell. If she casts another spell and gets a crit in that spell, then that would be another card scored on top of, you know, the objectives which have already been scored, or it could be a reaction from any of the ploys or upgrades that might be available, or a reaction from any of the other fighters. So, you know, this whole warband has a really crazy turn one objective chain that can just be scored. And if it goes off one objective after the other, it can just get very, very snowbally, you know, really quickly, and as an opponent, it can be very difficult to get back in the game, you know, when the opponents has scored this kind of crazy chain of score immediately cards.
Yeah, and many of which have not put many of their fighters in harm's way, basically, which is a big deal, kind of that a little bit of that base glory idea that you've talked about on your blog.
So, at least for my liking, the only other in-faction objective that I think is worth mentioning is Strike Swiftly.
Mm-hmm.
This is another score immediately that's just take an enemy fighter out of action with a charge.
Mm-hmm.
Given how strong Scathale can be on the charge, that can be a really easy way to score this one. Otherwise, if you've set up an attack previously by doing some small damage, either with Anslain or with Ilthari, the subsequent attack from a charge might only need to do one or two damage to score this, and that can be a pretty easy one to score, and it's pretty strong, and it can combo with Change of Tactics, which mm-hmm. is another sure. sort of nice reason to run this, because if you're going to be charging anyway, why not get more benefit out of it?
Yeah, and I think the other thing that helps this be a strong objective for them is the overall high threat range on this warband. So they're able to identify, yeah. hey, there's somebody who's vulnerable. They're a dangle bro or whatever, or somebody who's been weakened. You can often bring one of your other fighters to bear to seal the deal, close this out, as opposed to some of the slower warbands who may not be able to pick their targets as freely.
For sure. Yeah. Having the ability to choose your fights is sure. always strong.
Yeah, and so we've already hit four in-faction objectives that are pretty strong and in strong contention for, I think, any Guardians deck. That's a pretty big right out of the gate. That's a big yeah. deal. So I think we talked before, having strong in-faction objectives is something that can really push a particular faction up in the power level. Some of the out of faction ones, any time we're talking about longer threat range, keep them guessing is handy, because it means that with the Onslaught, she's able to maybe pull off an attack or a charge if that's a hard thing to get yourself to. And then an important thing based off of the FAQ about the scurry reaction. It's been pointed out that reactions on a card are a special kind of action. So keep them guessing, getting two glory in the end phase for doing at least four of the five things, which is a move that's not part of a charge, an attack that's not part of a charge, a guard, or an action on a fighter card. So because all four of these fighters have a reaction, probably over the course of the turn, one of those is going to go off, which means that not only does it make it easier, but it gives you a little bit more freedom instead of being as handcuffed as you sometimes feel with Keep Them Guessing. As soon as you got one of those, you've got not only is it more possible, but you have fewer activations that are made that might be suboptimal or less than exactly what you wanted.
Yeah, for sure.
I think this warband is massively reliant on the ability to roll crits. I mean, if you can roll crits consistently, or if you get a lucky streak, then they're insane.
Yeah.
If you maybe miss some of those crits or on a bad streak, then things can be very, very painful, and it can be pretty difficult to get them up and running. So, you know, it is a little bit of a gambler's warband. They look consistent, and they will be on a large number of games, but I think they are subject to, you know, significant variance on a kind of, you know, game-to-game basis. And I think, you know, if there's some situations where crits aren't coming up, then they're going to struggle a little bit with things like Keep Them Guessing and all of those other combos we talked about, you know, a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I think that's where you throw in a few things like Escalation or Alone in the Darkness to sort of help pad your glory without really having to do a whole lot. And I think we saw from the deck lists at the UK Game Expo that they were running, I think, just Alone in the Darkness. I don't remember off the top of my head. But having that sort of fairly passive extra two glory can be pretty big for evening out those spikes in the dice.
Sure. And in a warband where three of the four fighters have greater than range one on their attacks, it means you don't ever, you know, sometimes I had it in that Steelhearts deck, sometimes you're like, well, I'll charge in. I've got a really high probability of landing this hit. I'll kill the guy, and then the status will be restored to alone in the darkness. And then they crit defend you, and you're like, oh, no. Not only did I not get the kill, but I missed my two for alone.
Yep.
These fighters can make an attack without risking messing up their alone in the darkness score. Most of them.
Yeah.
I think, and I don't think it necessarily works all the time just because you don't necessarily run the Guardians this way, but I think keep chopping is not a horrible objective for them just because they do have that threat range and just the number of range 2 or greater attacks means that they'll probably be in position to make attacks without having to charge at least a few times in a turn, which is pretty important for scoring keep chopping.
Sure.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of other ones which might be worth looking at. I mean, I think we mentioned change of tactics already, but that's a pretty good one to have in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, potentially along with cover ground as well. Because all the fighters are starting on 4 health, so having spectral wings in there or something like that just to get another easy score immediately is potentially a nice little combo. You could spectral wings, change of tactics, calculated risk, and score two score immediately, which is pretty good. And the third one, I think, within a score immediately, which is pretty strong as well with this warband, is precise use of force.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the damage on the fighters has such a wide spread, you've got some with 1, you've got some with 2, and potentially getting up to 3 later on once you have upgrades. So with some of the spells and things that we'll probably talk about in a little bit, it's possible to manipulate your opponent's health in such a way that you can get precise use of force, or at least be in a position to score it. Whether it's worth a restricted slot is probably debatable.
Sure.
But I certainly think it's not a bad choice necessarily. Certainly if you're more of an aggressive player, there's a lot of play in there potentially.
That's a good point. And I guess thinking about that in broader terms, that particular objective, if you are running a warband that is relying on taking people down with a lot of little hits like these guys might be, you're with somebody who's got big swings like Molag, there's a good chance that you'll accidentally do too much damage. With these guys, by the time you get them down, your 1 or your 2 is probably just the right amount. So I think that's a natural fit. That's a really good point. Let's cover some of the gambits here. Has anybody got any other objectives? Or
sorry, are we going to talk about combination strikes and
we are right now. Go for it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. So I guess the other two, big finishers potentially are combination strikes and victory after victory, which obviously can combo quite well with all of the previous score immediately cards that we talked about. I mean, it's quite possible to get up to 6, 7, 8 score immediately cards, and if you get a good combo chain or a good crit chain, you can end up scoring a load of score immediately cards, plus combination strikes, plus victory after victory, all in the first turn or the second turn. And I've played against people who've had 7, 8, 9 glory by the end of the first the first round, which is pretty scary. Yeah. Then they're in a position to upgrade everybody, and the game can very quickly get away from you. I mean, it really is a lot of, you're relying on a lot of things to work out well. But it's not as difficult as it sounds. And certainly looking at some of the highest scoring cards that are restricted, I think, combination strikes and victory after victory are potentially decent choices.
I would say so. And again, because not only are there the normally strong score immediately's, but like we talked about, they're bringing their own raft of multiple strong score immediately's from their own in faction.
Yeah.
We're going to hit, let's hit gambits. So, Phil, is there an in-faction gambit you think is particularly noteworthy?
So we already kind of talked about Leech Power when we were talking about Scorched Earth. Leech Power is the destroying objective while Ilthari's standing on it, and then she heals 1. So that's obviously pretty good. But I think the other one that I really like, although it's a bit of a risk, is Curse of Dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
Curse of Dwindling is a gambit spell. It you need 2 lightning bolts to cast, so it is a little bit harder to get off. But anytime you cast it, you choose an enemy fighter within 5 hexes, and then they have -1 attack dice until either they get rid of the spell card, which there's very few things that actually do that, or they go out of action. So in most games, this is just going to mean that that fighter has -1 attack dice for the rest of the game. And I'm sure everyone has felt how good +1 dice can be, but -1 dice can just absolutely wreck your warband, especially if you're Molog.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what...
This oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So if Ilthari gets this off on Molog, that game's probably over.
And I think it's got a lot of... I mean, it's hard to think of a situation, unless you're playing somebody who's just not going to be swinging at anything, but there's always... feels like there's some target, you know, Briar Queen or Scritch or Magor or someone like that. And that probability curve, if you're in Warband odds, if you... As the more dice you get, 1 dice makes less of a difference. So if you're going from 3 dice to 4 dice or 4 to 5, it's helpful, but it doesn't make as big of an impact as if you're going from 2 down to 1. That's a huge chop there. So, and I think this right here is a card that makes me want to play the faction, right? Like, I see.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh man, that'd be so fun to pull off. I mean, it's a control through and through. And I think the top 2 decks at the UK Games Expo included this, which was cool to see. So
yeah.
I mean, it messes with your opponent's objectives that require a lot of dice. So it kind of stops Branching Fate from working. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to reduce the chances of Headshot going off with the dwarves and stuff like that.
Right.
As you've already mentioned, Molog, you know, he's down to maybe 1 dice. Which is, you know, pretty bad when he's coming up against 2 dodges or 2 shields, which are innate in the Guardians. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is definitely a very strong card. Obviously, it's on 2 lightnings, so I think it's a 25% chance of it going off if you don't have any, you know, anything to buff that up with extra magic dice or innate or anything like that.
That'd be if it was 2 focus. If it's if it's 2 channel, it's a little less than 50-50, but right about in there. But I think you can decide whether or not you want to build towards making this more castable or not, and then maybe chain things off of that. But one interesting gambit. So, kind of talk about these as a pair. There's Healing Potion, and what's tricky about this one, so it's a ploy that choose a fighter, roll a defense dice, shield or crit, you heal 2 wounds, otherwise heal 1 wound. So it's basically Inspiration Strikes for this warband with the added benefit that it may heal wounds if you've lost some. It's tricky because it exists only in the Shadespire box, or in the, I think there was the promotional card on a white dwarf,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, a white dwarf.
So if you're new to the game, this is a very strong card for this warband, but it's a little bit tough to get your hands on. I mean, not impossible, but you got to do a little more work than otherwise. Kind of a partner for this is Healing Amphora, and I like the design on this particular card. So it basically, think of Healing Potion, only you have to either target Galangan or somebody adjacent to Galangan. And what I like about this design is that it hinges around the one fighter who does not really care that much about getting inspired. So I think it's a little clever tweak there. I like that.
For sure. Sort of helps to balance the card a little bit.
Sure. Yeah.
By having some built-in weakness to it.
Yeah. And I'll keep it rolling. On that same topic, there's Leech Power, and Tony already talked a little bit about Leech Power earlier. Leech Power is interesting because like we talked about, it can heal Ilthari. It can help you score Scorched Earth, and it will inspire her. But this is also the one fighter who can self-inspire just incidentally through rolling crits by doing things. So again, it has like a lot of these small utilities. If they all come together in the same thing, it's super powerful. But it may have a situation where it's just not particularly relevant. Again, a cool card. And I think as we saw in some of the decks, it's not an auto include.
Right. Yep.
So, Tony, any gambits you want to make a case for?
Yeah, I think, you know, any reactions that can help you towards Lithe Spirits, that's the objective where you cast two reactions, where you make two reactions in a single phase. So, you know, Rebound is probably the obvious choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're getting even more value out of it, because even if it doesn't work, you're still taking yourself a little bit closer towards scoring an objective, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Ready for Action, which everybody is including anyway, because it's so strong.
Sure.
That's a reaction. So, you know, that's taking you closer to an objective as well. So that card gets even more value than it already has. And I just like reactions in general. I think they're kind of great cards, and I'm a massive fan of Last Chance. I just think it's incredible and massively underrated card. You know, when you start looking at how much tech there is, how many cards there are out there that which can manipulate dice, increase dice, things like Potion of Rage and Determined Effort and Haymaker and all those kind of things, Last Chance just doesn't care. You know, your odds are... odds of surviving an attack are going to remain the same, you know, regardless of what your opponent does to buff their fighters. So, you know, they can give them Awakened Weapon, or they can use Potion of Rage, and then, you know, you bust out with Last Chance, and all of that, all that stuff's wasted. So I think it's a great card anyway, and it's got an excellent role in this warband, mm-hmm. Because it is so crucial to keep the leader alive. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later on. We talk about, you know, fighting against this warband or whatever else, but so much of the success of the warband really revolves around the leader. So if you can keep her alive, you know, for the as long as possible, your chances of winning increase. Mm-hmm. And she's on two dodges, so with Last Chance, there's a very good chance of you know, staying alive if she gets targeted.
It definitely, when you've got it in hand, makes you feel more confident putting her in a slightly riskier position. And sometimes even baiting out, you know, an ill-advised charge that you can then collapse in on. While you're mentioning reactions, this was something that popped into my mind. Not only is it important, you know, if you have reaction gambits in hand, you may get to that Lithe Spirits, the score immediately for two reactions in a round. You may get there naturally based on your fighter's built-in reactions. But these will provide a safety net, and they also will get you there faster. And that's important because... one, you know, scoring your score immediately earlier in the round gives you that glory that much earlier to use and then leverage for more things. But it gets that objective cycled. So if you can cycle through, you know, score Lithe Spirits on your second activation or somewhere in there pretty early on, and then you draw up something like, let's say, Change of Tactics, then you're drawing Change of Tactics in time to still score at that round. So you say, okay, I still have two activations to go. That gives me still enough time to put Onslaught on guard and charge with her. So getting a score immediately scored earlier in the round, I mean, it's probably obvious, but it's a strong move that will keep the engine going on this deck.
For sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of interesting how things have changed, because in Shadespire and at the start of the season, people were usually saving their score immediately until the end of the phase. So they would, you know, try and score Change of Tactics or something right at the end of the phase before objectives are scored, to kind of expose their fighters to as little danger as possible in terms of getting a counterattack. Mm-hmm. But I think with victory after victory and combination strike, and, you know, the fact that we've got so many really good score immediately now, is the tempo of the game's just increased, and people are just going straight out of the gates and trying to score as many score immediately, you know, as quickly as possible, which is interesting, because you do end up exposing your fighters to a lot more danger. So I think it's kind of a high risk, high reward strategy, and you know, I think it's been doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. But there are going to be those games when you don't make the you don't make the smart move, you don't make the safe move. You know, you go for the quick score, and it doesn't work out, and then basically, you know, you lose the game as a consequence. So you know, beware, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, I like that. I like that tension there. And what's cool is you can also be deciding based on your matchup. Like, hey, you know, do I feel like I'm in the driver's seat? Is it safe? Is it okay for me to play it safe and conservative, or is this other deck gonna Do I have to really get off to the races to stay up with this whoever I'm playing against?
Absolutely.
I think some good reactions to mention here. You've mentioned some great ones already. I think Trap and Pit Trap are two good ones. Again, you got to decide if they're worth the restricted. But you're a warband that has a lot of different ranges, and so Twist is not going to get much mileage for you. But Trap and Pit Trap can be that one little extra bump that you need. And this is a warband that needs a little help with damage. So I think those definitely need to be considered when you're putting your stuff together. Phil, you got any gambits you think are worthy of mention?
Yeah, so another one that sort of helps with damage and also gives you another reaction is Stand and Shoot. So Stand and Shoot is when one of your fighters with a range 3 attack gets charged. Or, well, I guess I should say, it's just when an enemy charges and ends adjacent, you can use this reaction to make an attack with a range of 3 or more. There's no like wording of who they were actually charging and who they were attacking. So even if you had Gallenhan and Onslane standing next to each other and they charged Gallenhan for some reason, Onslane could still take a shot. So a fun one there. You could do that with Ilthari too, just to get a little extra damage when they try to come in and pop your somewhat squishy fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that so I've got a few here that I think are sort of fringe and maybe are not always going to be great, but I've actually seen one of these used against me and I thought it was an interesting choice. Was Power Surge. So normally, so this is a reaction that after you've rolled your spell dice, if you have a crit, you play this and you get another crit. Normally, you wouldn't want to do that necessarily unless it was a super huge moment in the game, because you'd get two crits on your spell and you'd hurt yourself. But with Ilthari, that just means, okay, I take one damage, I heal one damage, and now I've got a spell that has at least two crits in it at this point, which means her spell attack could potentially be, you know, unable to be defended against, or you could just really guarantee that that spell you really wanted, like Curse of Dwindling, went off.
Sure.
So sort of a fringe card, but I think it's an interesting one.
I was doing something that is certainly bad, but I was trying to combo that with I'm gonna forget the name of Peerless Strike.
Oh, Peerless Fighter.
Peerless Fighter, which is a score immediately if there's two crits in your attack roll, as a score immediately for two boys. Nice. So I was like, oh yeah, you could pop this out on Ilthari and she doesn't.
So you gotta roll a crit first and have this in your hand.
Yeah.
That objective in your hand. Okay.
I was trying to rationalize it by saying, well, you might just roll two crits with somebody else, but you know, the warband just doesn't, they don't really have a lot of dice. They got a lot of two hammer attacks. So I knew as I was doing it that it was more cute than good, but it's still fun to think about.
For sure.
Go ahead.
Another one sort of in that fringe area that I thought was interesting was Grievous Riposte. Another reaction, but it's so when an attack from an adjacent enemy fighter with a range of 1 targets your friendly fighter and they fail and you've rolled at least a crit, so we're basically already in Gallenhan's reaction territory, they then suffer 2 damage. So you could basically be using this to allow Gallenhan to have a choice between 1 or 2 damage after. And I'm not even sure. Are they in the same reaction window or not?
Can you read off Grievous Riposte again?
So Grievous Riposte is that play this after an attack action with a range of 1 that targets a friendly fighter and fails.
Mm-hmm.
If there are any crits in your defense roll, the attacker suffers 2 damage. My guess is, looking at the wording here for Gallenhan.
Yeah, I think they're both after an attack action, and that's one of those.
Yep.
We're going to do an episode, I think, on reactions pretty soon here, especially because of this, and it comes up a lot, especially because this warband is a timing window. I think the after an attack action is one of the few windows that is occupied by a lot of lot of different effects.
Yep. So again, probably not really a great choice, but sort of interesting because you're already kind of hoping for that to happen anyway. And it gives you another reaction that you can just throw out there.
Sure. Yeah, man, that would be a heartbreaker. Or like I avoid avoid Galleon because I'm like, I don't want to mess with getting crit defended and then go get Grievous riposted by Eltharia or something like that. Yeah. I think I need to take a little walk around the room real quick and come back. Yeah. All right. You got any more rogue selections there, Phil?
Yeah, I've got one more. Taunting Challenge. Okay. So Taunting Challenge is another reaction where if... So you play this after an enemy fighter's move action that's part of a charge. You choose a friendly fighter adjacent to that fighter. And if the enemy fighter does not target that fighter with their subsequent attack action, the enemy fighter is no longer inspired, cannot be inspired later, and that effect persists until that fighter is out of action. So basically, you could put your opponent into a situation where if they want to charge Ilthari, they have to be adjacent to Galahan as well, and then you can basically just say, either attack Galahan or get uninspired for the rest of the game. And I feel like that could really mess with people in certain situations. I don't know how good it is, but it's sort of a nice little like way to disincentivize attacking certain fighters.
Sure. It feels so. I think I want to say, I think Can You Roll a Crit did a piece on this.
Editor's note, with apologies to Stephen Bann, I should have said call it Shadespire.
He's a little cold on it. I think if there's any warband that might be interested in it, it's this one, because this is a warband that has a fighter that somebody probably doesn't want to attack, and you're fine with them attacking, and that's Galleon. And that's a tribute to his strength as a defender, that he can make this card look like it might be something you think about. So.
Sure.
Well, let's hop on to upgrades. Tony.
You want to talk about some of the spells as well?
Oh, yes. Excellent. Yes, go for it.
So there's a few spells which are really useful for the warband as well. They have their own faction spell called Pangs of the Great Lack, which is a gambit spell that casts on one swirly, mm-hmm. and that basically has a range of 5 hexes mm-hmm. and does 1 damage. So it's an even longer range sphere of Akski, or potentially Abyssal's Withering as well. So if you want to go magic heavy with this warband, that's another potential route to go. You could take 3 high range, high probability damage spells, mm-hmm. and that's going to take you closer to getting Sorcerer's Scouring or any of the other score immediately that we've talked about, and sure. Some great options there.
Particularly nice for doing things like getting around Last Chance. If you get somebody down to their 1 and pop them with a gambit spell, Last Chance is not usable in that situation. So,
And it combos well with Precise Use of Force, because you can pass these preemptively and then get them to the the wound range that you want in order to potentially score that objective as well.
Yep, I think that's a great point. There, any of those spells that help you with your low damage situation get exactly where you need to be are pretty strong here. While we're on that, are there any other gambit spells that you think are worthy of consideration?
I guess maybe as a, dark horse, maybe just, but knowing that Ilthari is likely to be targeted, I think Terrifying Visage is maybe not a bad choice. It's cast on one swirl, and then basically any time an enemy fighter is adjacent to the caster, they have -1 attack dice.
Mm-hmm. What always makes that card and some of the other cards we've talked about that require adjacency challenging, I feel like a lot of the most threatening pieces out there right now are attacking from more than 1 hex away. So Molag with his range 2, and Stormsire with his range 3, and all these things, and so I think that makes those a little bit harder to take, but still
for sure
scoping. Shall we hit some upgrades here?
Sure.
Well, we've been talking about him a ton, but Galleon and his warding stance. As we've talked about many times, a card has to be really strong for it to be a fighter-specific upgrade and still look real good. And warding stance is definitely in the conversation. It's a plus one defense on a fighter that's already four wounds with two need and shields. Getting a three shields is pretty outrageous. Pretty tasty grab. And getting one extra dice increases the chance of getting his reaction off. The reason I would back away from it is it's almost too much, right? Like if he's already somebody that people aren't excited about attacking, throwing this on is just like, hey, you weren't going to attack him anyway. You know, like it's kind of making, I don't know if win more is the, but defend more. I don't know.
Defend yeah. More. Yeah. So. Yeah. Although, so I agree. I do think that that's the case, but I do wonder if that means that you could start using him very aggressively because your opponent really doesn't want to target him. But at the same time, if they're going to ignore him, you can sort of punish them for that.
Because
if you push him up to three damage or something, all of a sudden he's really scary.
Yeah, so you roll that crit on the defense, you knock a four health fighter down to three, and then you hit them back, you know, and they're done for, right?
Yeah. Right. And with reach two, he doesn't have... I mean, he could go stand in the middle of your opponent's board and threaten a pretty large area without having to move a whole lot. And I think that maybe could be an avenue for making that card a little more appealing, because I think you're right. I think just using it from a defensive standpoint, it's like, well, he's already super tanky. Mm-hmm. If you make him more tanky, it's sort of the Molog effect of like, if you make Molog too hard to kill, people just stop trying, right? It's like, just go after the squigs. I don't have time to kill Molog.
Right.
I guess the debate is whether it's better than Trusted Defender or Champion's Fortitude, which are the kind of general faction cards where you get to reroll one dice. I think technically it's better to be rolling three dice than two dice because you have a chance for more successes, but it's kind of marginal. And I guess the question is whether you take a card that you can apply to any fighter or you take a card that's specific just to Galahan. So right. I guess if you took Twisted Defender or Champion's Fortitude, you could always put that on the Yothari or somebody else, you know, if you needed to, if he was dead or, you know, not in the right position or something like that. So I guess it's whether the marginal gains are worth it or not, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I would agree.
Well, on that topic of fighter specific, one I wanted to talk about was Cage of Thorns. Have you guys, what do you guys think of this one? So it's a upgrade Ilthari specific. It still needs focus to cast and only does one damage. So it's at the very least, it's only as good as her current spell. If she's inspired, it's worse than, but it lays a move token on its target. And I believe it needs to damage the target to do that. It has to be a successful attack, but I'll double check.
It does have to succeed.
Yeah. So what I saw this, and this was the other card. This coupled with Curse of the Dwindling were cards that made me, especially when I was playing this control Steelhearts, it was like, wow, these look really tasty. this seems like it really gives you some options for control play. And I think maybe the reason we don't see it is that they're not leaning as hard into control as maybe they, or maybe it's not the optimum option for them. We'll talk more about that later. But this seems like a repeatable transfixing stare at greater range. And using an upgrade instead of a gambit. So I thought this looked real tasty, and I'd love to play around with it some.
I think it has some potential. I think it could end up being really painful for your opponent, but I think its mileage actually depends on your opponent more than on you, and I think that sort of makes it slightly less appealing. And what I mean by that is that, say you're facing like Molog or Magors or, you know, a lower number warband that doesn't want to be restricted in their movement, then all of a sudden this has a whole bunch of, you know, value. But if you're facing, you know, ghosts where they can push for mobility, or if you're facing even just like Gits where they just have so many fighters that it's like, oh, you put a move token on my one guy, well, I'll just come and get you with somebody else.
Who else has got an upgrade that they care to chat about here?
I think it's boring, but Constant Growth is an in-faction Great Fortitude, and that's always good. Plus one wounds is always good, and for a warband that has a small number of wounds on most of their fighters, having situationally being able to say, hey, I need to beef this one up, can be really useful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's worth paying the restricted slot and going up to Sudden Growth or Deathly Fortitude with this warband?
I think it would really depend on what strategy you're trying to go for.
I think you have you could make a pretty strong case for it because they have enough speed that they can overcome the downside, and then add to that, you know, if Ilthari's steadily healing herself back up, that makes she can leverage those extra wounds even better than someone else could, right? I think there are builds that like that in particular, and I think maybe even one of the top ones, again, to reference back to the UK Games Expo, I think one of the top ones might have had that sitting in there as well.
They did. They had Sudden Growth.
Sudden Growth, yeah, in the winner's deck. So,
yeah, my guess is that probably goes on Ilthari. If you are going to run it, the one you're really trying to make sure lives is her.
Sure, but I mean,
and she's super fast. Sure. So,
but you do see it come down. It can be a reactive thing if whoever ended up overextended, you know. But yeah, I think that's a good guess, and that lets her get more mileage out of that double dodge as well.
How about you, Tony? Any infection upgrades or other upgrades you really like for these guys?
There's a couple of cards which are borderline amazing, but unfortunately it's hard to squeeze them into the deck because there's so much other stuff that you need for other reasons. But Flickering Image and Light-Footed are insanely good just in general, but very, very good in this warband. So these, if people don't know, these cards are basically cards that allow you to push fighters when you either score a critical hit or if you are attacked and you could be driven. Actually, let's go through Light-Footed. So Light-Footed reads, during an attack action that could drive this fighter back, whether or not your opponent chose to, you can instead push them one hex. And that's a reaction. So let's say that somebody shoots you from range and they're setting up to trap you or pit trap you. This reaction effectively stops it because they don't get to push you, and you get to push yourself instead. So it's not technically a drive back at that point. So none of those cards trigger. It also blocks things like Get the Hens because they can't knock you back.
Yeah.
It stops you from getting pushed into lethal hexes, and it's a reaction as well. So it takes you closer to scoring the reaction
Live objective spirits,
for the warband as well.
Yeah.
So there's a whole host of these. There's actually two of these. One's called Lightfoot. The other one's called Superior Agility.
Mm-hmm.
That effectively, you know, do the same thing. And there's other options that you can use as well. Blessing of Hydrox and Duelist Speeds. There's plenty of opportunities there, but I particularly like these ones because it messes with your opponent's objective scoring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the same time as it's getting you stuff. Whether or not these are worth it when you've only got 10, 10 slots probably in most decks is, I guess, you know, up for debate, but they're certainly fun to play around with.
I think to your point about protecting yourself from many things, including protection from lethal hexes, that one especially is more and more important these days, as calculated risk has basically accelerated the number of lethal hexes we see on boards. It's much more likely that we're going to encounter them out there. So having some additional protection plan is a decent idea.
Yeah, I mean, they've got lots of different uses as well. I mean, somebody comes in and they have ready for action, you know, and they're getting set up to you know.
Yeah.
So basically you use the push to move out of range, or to squirrel away behind a block hex. So you can avoid ready for action. You can avoid my turn. You can avoid any of those ploys where the enemy gets to attack again if they miss.
Mm-hmm.
So they're incredibly strong. It's just whether that's worth it as opposed to just having more flat health.
Sure.
And that's the real debate. But I think with these guys, because they get the ploys from scoring reactions, I don't know, there might be a case to be made for them.
Yeah.
Sure.
Speaking of a case to be made for something that is a reaction, is Potion of Constitution is something to talk about with these fellas as well. And Can You Roll a Crit just dropped an article really breaking this one down. I think, Can You Roll a Crit? Call it Shadespire has one.
Yeah.
Actually, so does Can You Roll a Crit. Call it Shadespire has one that's a real in-depth comparison. And then Can You Roll a Crit, John had as a tip in there. His discussion of that, and they come to slightly different conclusions, although they make a number of the same points. On the downside, it's not helping you against things, you know, the one damage spells and lethal and that sort of thing. It doesn't help you with these things that are one hit. It's a upgrade that you react to discard it and take one less damage. On the plus side, it's an extra reaction, right? So you can think of it effectively as plus one wound, except that it's another reaction to get you towards lithe spirits. And then with this warband, where three quarters of your fighters are walking around with three wounds, it keeps them under the threshold for getting hit with Glory Seeker, so it can protect them a little longer. And that's a pretty common card to see, especially in a meta that enjoys lots of ranged attacks, which can leverage that. So
definitely,
I think that's a strong one to consider as well. Phil, got any other upgrades we need to touch on here?
There's so many, but I think Well of Power is maybe the other one that I'll mention. Putting Eltharia up to three dice makes things great for a number of reasons. It helps you cast your gambits more. It gives you a higher chance of rolling crits to get her reaction to trigger. It also makes her range attack more accurate. So from one upgrade, you get a number of different benefits. The only downside being that Well of Power only gives you that bonus to your spellcasting if you're already inspired. And although she is probably the easiest fighter in your warband to inspire, it can make this a dead card early on if you do draw it in the first round.
And like we've talked about, if there's any fighter who does not care as much about throwing extra magic dice, it's Eltharia who can instantly heal back any overload she takes. So,
yeah.
I think one sort of surprise for a lot of people coming out of the UK Games Expo was the inclusion of specifically here with Nullstone Spear, although the number one deck had Nullstone Spear and the number two deck had Seeking Stones, which... felt like a pretty rogue choice. Somebody was looking at the meta. Jay was looking at the meta. Thought he saw something he needed to do there. Whatever weapon you pick, and I think I tried to build it with some of the shade glass weapons or something. Those are particularly powerful. One, because you may select a weapon that gives you extra damage, which is something that the warband sometimes needs. But whoever you put it on, I should say, whatever weapon you select, if you're putting it on Slain, you can leverage her ability to get an extra attack out of a weapon. So if you're investing a card slot in a powerful weapon, on Slain can score a kill, react, and take another attack. And that getting an extra attack with something that's even better than her one damage bow shot is pretty tasty. So I think that's... Think carefully about what weapon you might like to include, whether it be a high accuracy one like Nullstone Sword or something damaging. If you're feeling crazy, there's a what's the random one? I'm gonna look this up.
Oh, the Faded Blade.
Yeah, Faded Blade. Ever run around with Faded Blade? But specifically, I think Nullstone Spear was an inspired choice because it leverages that extra range. That range two is a big deal. It means that it's much more likely you're going to be able to get that other get that reaction and use the spear for the reaction instead of just a bow shot, because you're going to be able to reach out and touch something else.
And it's great for Scathael too, because his trigger's off of weapon upgrades too, but giving him that reach too means that now he is also able to sort of stand back and hit just like the rest of the warband.
Mm-hmm. Sure. All right. I think, has anybody got any other upgrades they want to discuss before we break down a few other things here?
Yeah, I mean, there's a discussion. I mean, there's an idea here about whether it's worth playing the Caterfrain Relics in this warband. I hope I'm not spoiling this for anybody, but if you buff up Galaghan with the Caterfrain Relics, then
brutal.
It's a very, very bad day. Because you know he's the person who you don't want to be attacking, and now all of a sudden you have to, otherwise he's going to win the game single-handedly.
Sure.
And all of those relics are reactions, so they combo with their reaction scoring cards, and you know allows him to re-roll the defense dice, so if he doesn't get crits on the first roll, he can get them on the second roll.
Awful.
Yeah, so there's a lot of... The dream is to get all of those score immediately cards, you know, in the first round, and then just equip relics on Galaghan, and you can just get into insane glory scoring territory. But of course, everything has to come together nicely and fall into place. But you know, that's potentially a match winning combo if you can make it work.
Yeah, and I'm just looking. I mean, this is. Probably if you're up this high, the 4+ relics, that reaction is after this fighter's action, draw 2 power cards. That doesn't say activation.
Yep,
and if a reaction on the card counts as an action.
Exactly. So you attack him, he reacts, he gets a crit, and then he draws more power cards as well. It's insane. As I say, it's not easy to do, because sure. if you're gonna go that route, you're gonna have to put in Spoils of Battle and Ghoulish Pact and things like that. So then you start to have to maybe drop magic cards. So you've got to take the deck in a different direction. But you know, it's hilarious if you can make it work.
Yeah, hilarious. So
very interesting.
I like that a lot. I have not. I keep thinking about trying to put a relic deck together just to try it out, and I've not done that yet. But maybe, Phil, you want to run up against a relic deck a bunch of times?
Sure. How about we do relics against relics?
Goblin relics versus Guardians relics or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out. So let's talk about strengths and weaknesses. We've touched on a bunch of these. I think overall. A strength for them, nice in-faction cards. They've got some great objectives, they've got some good gambits, and they've got some good upgrades. They're getting some good mileage out of that on top of the stuff that's universally available.
And I think another one is, and we've touched on this too, but they're fast. They're all speed 4 at least to start, and then some of them get faster. And then you combine that with the fact they're mostly range 2 or more. So they're mobile, they have a huge threat range, which, like we had talked about early on, means that they can sort of choose their battles, which can't really be overstated as to how strong that can be. Because you never really want to have to put yourself in a position where by going in to make an attack, you've put yourself in a bad spot.
Right. This one is a nod to Tony, because the first thing he said when we brought up Galaghan was, I've written strength, Galaghan is a douche.
Absolutely.
If you can find a way to make him relevant, make him so that the opponent can't ignore him, then he is a massive strength for this warband. And even then, having a fighter with range 2 and 2 damage unupgraded, if you're trying to walk past that guy, he's still able to take a toll, you know, make you pay a tax on the way past. So I think he on his own is one of the strengths of the warbands.
Yeah, I mean, they're a warband that I think the longer the game goes on, it kind of sounds obvious, really, but the longer the game goes on, the greater chance they have of winning. And they just... they've got so many good score immediatelys and so many combos that the more cards that they're drawing, the more likely it is that they're going to get the right hand and then snowball from there.
Sure.
So, but they're all low health, and they do fall, they do crumble to kind of really early aggro. So to some extent, Molog is the kind of kryptonite for this warband, because if you can charge Molog in, you know, first or second activation and hit the boss and take out the leader, then you can more or less cripple the warband, because they no longer cast spells. So, you know, a lot of the gambits are no good anymore. That then affects the ability to score all of the objectives. So Godsworn are good. I mean, if you can get in early with the Yagathra, throw the javelin, take out the boss, that can work quite well.
Yeah.
The thorns, if you can teleport the Bride Queen in and snipe the boss, that can work out pretty well as well. Molog's very good in that respect, because obviously you can't hide from him most of the time. So, you know, I think the trick against this warband is to try and get around Galahkan as quickly as possible and really target down the leader. So I think, you know, cards like Victorious Duel are a very good counter to this warband, because you're gonna have to kill the boss anyway.
Yeah.
So you might as well get two glory. So, you know, if Molog does a round one charge and kills the boss, that's pretty much game over. Now, I think the odds are against him. I think two hammers against two dodgers is like 47% chance, I think, of success. So, you know, it's close to 50-50. But that's probably a good gamble to take if you're Molog.
I've certainly been willing to take a riskier dive in, just because the risk reward is so high on dropping her. You can cut out a big chunk of your opponent's power deck. They probably have a number of upgrades and gambits that are only going to be able to run through her. And if you can, you know, make 15 to 20% of their power deck dead in hand, that's a pretty strong play. I've found she's also a little bit often vulnerable to a hidden paths. They like to place her at the back, and not only that, is she'll often end up in a spot where you can engineer a trap situation, so mitigate some of that dodge. Sometimes it'll be on that Shaishin Stardial board. You can find a way to pin her up against something and get that damage through. So not always, but it's something if you're playing. Be cognizant of opportunities there or opportunities against. So, one, I wrote this down as a combined strength and weakness. The warband has a spread of specialties, which is to say that there's cards that overlap between fighters, like the range 3 stuff. Ilthari and Onslaying can take advantage of those cards, and great strength that's usable on Skathal and Galleon, and to a much lesser extent Ilthari. I mean, not nothing, but so there's some overlap, but then like great strength isn't going to work on Onslaying, and the range 3 stuff isn't going to work on the other two. It feels like we didn't mention it, but Concealed Weapon would look like a great card for putting on Skathal, where he's doing either 2 or 5 damage depending on his crit situation. But that's a card that's only going to work on Ilthari out of there, and again, in a situation where she doesn't want to do it. So it feels like sometimes a weakness where I'll be building a deck with these guys and realize that I'm putting in cards that are only going to work on 1 or 2 of the fighters. On the flip side, it's a strength, because when you line up against them, you're not sure, hey, is this someone who's really trying to get a ton of mileage out of Onslaying, or is this somebody who's trying to get a lot of work from Ilthari, or is it somebody who's built a deck that is able to do any of those things? And so it makes it makes deck building tricky, but also makes facing it tricky to figure out where your target priorities should be. And I think you have some defaults going in. If you don't know anything else, you are probably going after Ilthari. But it's possible to build it where she's not quite such a linchpin.
Definitely. I think any 4 damage cleave attacks are also very strong against this warband. So
sure.
If you can get Grimnir close to Galakhan. She's gonna chop down some trees and do some damage there. Also, Magor, can get in there and do some damage. Riptooth can get in there. So, the thing with Galakhan, you either have to decide, well, am I going to try and kill him and then just roll onto the back line, or am I going to try and go around him? It's not usually a good idea to try and kind of chip him down. So either one-shot him or kind of ignore him, I think, for the most part.
Sure. Phil, you got any strengths or weaknesses you want to hit here?
No, I think we've covered them all.
Well, the only other one, and we did mention earlier, is that that Inspire condition is kind of difficult. And it has varying payoffs. Like we talked about Galangin, no big deal. Ilthari, big deal. Bump that ranged attack up, give her extra speed. So where it's real hard to figure out how much energy to put into that. And very interestingly, the winning Gen Con deck did not include any gambits that would inspire. There were no healing gambits in that deck. So the only fighter that was ever going to inspire in that deck was going to be Ilthari, and she was just going to do it on crits when she cast. Meanwhile, Jay Claire's deck, the number two, definitely included Leech Power, Healing Amphora, and Healing Potion, so I had three. So there's two extremely strong performances that went very different directions on how important they thought it was to inspire. I thought that was pretty cool. I like seeing that in a deck where it's not, where your way of getting to that powerful build is often very different.
Yeah. So people who play this warband often will tend to do an offset board setup as well, which is something to just be aware of if you're trying to tech to beat these guys. Because obviously in doing that, they're lengthening the distance between your front line and their kind of back line. And it creates a nice little choke point with Galakhan as well. If you have that three hex choke point in the middle, so it can make it even more difficult to get through the line and get to the backfield. So, if people aren't running Hidden Paths and Fainway Crystal and Spectral Wings, things like that, it's definitely becoming even more important to put those cards in against this deck.
Absolutely. All right, well, that's a pretty good strengths and weaknesses breakdown, I think. Let's just give a quick glance over what we think about particular matchups, and then we'll close it down. Just looking at different archetypes, how do you feel they match up against an aggro deck, like your typical aggro deck? And I know that's tough because aggro Magors looks different than aggro Molag or whatever, but going into that, what do you think, Phil?
I feel like they generally have a pretty strong matchup against aggro. I think that'll really depend on positioning and who wins board roles. In a just straight squared up, slugfest, they're probably not liking that too much. Because there's just not enough distance between your pieces that you need to save for later and all of their guys that want to knock their head off. But I think if you figure that half the games you're going to get to have the board your way and they can still score pretty passively, I think they can effectively deny enough glory to aggro that they should be able to sort of withstand the initial charge and then get the snowball going to turn it around the other way.
I think to Tony's earlier point, I think if they can stretch the game out, if they can delay that, then it goes in their favor as they especially if they can pull just one or two fighters in and then gang up on those with that speed, they're good at that ganging up.
Sure. I think the question with aggro, it's just a general question for all matchups, but in particular with the Ilthari's Guardians, is, do you go for weight of dice or do you go for weight of attacks? Mm-hmm. So, do you tech to attack many, many times and hope that eventually you're going to hit, or do you kind of, buff somebody up for an uber attack? And I think because of Galakhan having two shields and the boss having, two dodges, I think you actually, as an aggro player, you do need weight of dice against these fighters. Once you start getting to 3 and 4, maybe even 5 dice, then those kind of defensive advantages really start to kind of trail off.
Right.
And they don't have the health buffer early on to withstand a kind of good hit.
Yeah.
So, you know, Haymaker with Molog is really good early on, or, you know, Riptooth with Haymaker, Riptooth with Determined Effort. Something along those lines can really cause these, you know, causes warband trouble. So I think as an aggro strategy, it's probably better to go for weighted dice in a smaller number of attacks than to go for, you know, weight of attacks, frequency of attacks across the whole game, especially as they can heal up kind of plink damage as well quite effectively a lot of the time. So, you know, it really does come down to a lot of the time, I think, whether you manage to get that attack to land in the first round or not.
I think you're absolutely correct on that. I think a lot of the aggro matchups are going to swing right at the end of the first action phase, or right at the start of the second action phase, where there's still an opportunity maybe to take down Ilthari. Trying to chip away at Gangling Infant feels like a really awful idea. So, objective play, I can say that it feels kind of bad, because you look across from them and they've kind of messed with the objectives a little bit, and then they may be burning two of them down if they're looking to score Scorched Earth, which really can mess with especially tactical supremacies who are looking to sneak onto particular objectives. They may not have gone that way, but I think it makes objective play just scary in general.
Mm-hmm. Which is almost a shame, because I feel like objective play is already sort of the, I wouldn't say least represented way of playing, but definitely a lesser represented way of playing. And if all of a sudden it's, you know, has a hard counter in the meta, and especially one that's already performing this well, that it might just sort of dry up altogether. Mm-hmm.
And then last, there's flex, which kind of covers that, but then control.
Sorry, can I just say something quick about the objective play?
Yeah,
is that right? Yeah, so they also have an objective called Domain Denied, which one glory if no enemy fighters are holding objectives. So not only can they, you know, score Scorched Earths through Abyssals of Making and potentially take them closer to scoring spellcasting objectives, they can also, you know, potentially get Domain Denied as well. So that's it's a tough matchup, I think, for objectives.
I agree. With control or defensive play, I don't have a strong feeling either way. I think they have enough passive or base glory where they can be in it, and then enough speed to go after whoever is trying to sit back. I think that probably feels tight, although I have not not played that matchup, so I don't know if anyone's got any other thoughts on that.
Yeah, I haven't played it either, but I would guess that it's sort of a coin toss. It's going to come down to how the cards came out, who's going to score passively faster, and then towards the late game, whoever got snowballed quicker is probably going to be able to get some late attacks in to sort of juice their glory pool and just sort of finish it off.
Yeah, I think that's one of the downsides of the, you know, the current meta that we're in with the combination strikes, which we have to victory score immediately meta, is that it is increasingly, you know, draw order is becoming increasingly more important. I mean, it's always been important, but it can make or break a game now. Mm-hmm. So if you have combo curse breakers versus combo guardians, both sitting away from each other at distance, a lot of that game's going to come down to, you know, draw order of cards, and then maybe a few dice rolls here and there. So both players, I think, are going to play fairly cagey,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to come down to a few key kind of, you know, draws or a few key dice rolls. Tricky one.
And especially maybe in that more so. It's always important, but knowing what hand to hold at the start of the game and what not to.
Sure.
Having a lot of practice with that.
Yeah, I mean, if you draw victory after victory in Combination Strike in the first hand with Escalation, then, you know, which has happened to me so many times, you know, it's not even funny, that, you know, it's game over, right, often.
Sure.
And your opponent draws into Harness the Storm, gets the God Hand or whatever else, then it can feel really bad. And there's not a lot, I don't think there's much you can do as a player to kind of mitigate that. You know, you can go in and try and score some glory from killing stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe have Tome of Offerings as a backup or Tome of Glories or something like that. You know, give yourself another way maybe to come back in the late game. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly an uphill battle if you don't get a decent first hand.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I think there's some of those, like you, I think you're coming up with an example where it's, your way against you. I think the tough one is the marginal hands where, you know, not quite as obvious that you need to throw it. I think that can, I mean, that's true for any matchup, but yeah, I had not thought about that, but I think you are correct that the draw order has become really crucial. And I think about my games, I can often like look at that opening hand and I can feel like you feel like your probability meter going up or down on the side of your heads up display. You're like, oh yeah, this feels real good. Or like, oh no, like the other guy doesn't know it yet, but this is looking pretty bad for me already. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you can tell just with the first hand, you can be like, well, I can't win this one.
Yeah.
You just, you know, you know, immediately, you know, you play it out and try and mitigate the glory losses. But yeah, it's tough when that happens.
Well, anybody got anything else they want to cover on the Guardians? I think we've covered a lot, but any final thoughts here?
Nobody should play them. Everybody should just avoid them.
I'm sure with them being number one and two at the last Grand Clash, that'll really happen there. So
no, it's all lies. Play Skellies at the Grand Clash. Yeah. I hope to see 110 skeleton decks.
That'd be cool. All right. What do you have any events coming up? You gonna make any Grand Clashes coming up here, Tony?
Yeah, I'm gonna be in the UK in July, so I'm gonna make it to the
Grand Clash. The 2 day?
I can only get to the first day. So
oh.
So even if I do, you know, get lucky and qualify for the second day, I won't be able to play. So my objective is to try and take out some of the sharks. So hopefully I'll get some.
All right.
Hopefully I get some, you know, matchups against good players earlier on and knock out some of the decent players, hopefully, just to create some salt. I'm really looking forward to, you know, meet everybody in the community. I've been chatting with people in the UK and, you know, everyone's great in this community. That's one of the best things about this game, I think. And so I'm looking forward to seeing people and, you know, playing some games and having some beers and, you know, just enjoying the hobby, right?
Right, sure. Absolutely. Well, look forward to hearing about it. I'm looking forward to more blog posts, too. Speaking of which, if somebody wants to find your blog, currently, honestly, the way I do it is I go to Wigglehammer and click the link there. Where can they find your the End Phase blog?
Yeah, it's just end-phase.com. So for some strange reason, it doesn't always show up on Google, but you know, if you dig around for it, you should be able to find it eventually, hopefully. And I'm going to keep trying to make regular updates, you know, when I can.
Yeah, it's great. I'm glad it's filling a nice spot in the blogosphere of Underworlds. If people want to get in touch with you any other ways, or you got any contact info, or is that the blog the best route?
Yeah, just, you know, you can send a message to the blog. I'm active on the Facebook groups, the Warhammer Underworlds community and Warhammer Underworlds groups. I'm on the Discord server as well. So, you know, people can instant message me through Facebook or whatever else. So it's, you know, I would try and get back to people as quickly as I can.
Sure. For us, again, if you want to get in touch with us, we're on Twitter at WTHcast, or you can drop us an email, whatthehexcast@gmail.com. You can check out all the Mortal Realms content at themortalrealms.com, or the other campaign phase, story phase, that sort of thing that we do on the other. As always, it's greatly helpful if you can drop us a review on whatever listener you use, or just let somebody know, word of mouth. It's awesome. It sounds like that's been going around too, so that's been great. your recommended listening. We're going to give you two for this episode. We're going to recommend The Seed 2.0 by The Roots. That's off of Phrenology. And we'll go with Galang, and that's by MIA off of Arolar. So you can check those out. There'll be links in the show notes. That's going to do it for us today for What the Hex. I've been Davey.
And this is Phil.
I'm Tony. Thanks very much.
All right. And that's pretty much it. You got any questions? I'm going to play with fire and move my laptop just a little bit here.